guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Welcome back for another episode. Guys, remember to follow us on all the things. And if you can, go to the Apple Store and leave us a 5-star review. Five stars.
Pretty please with a cherry on top.
Yes. That will help people find us. How are you, my darling?
I'm good. I'm hanging in. You know, like spring is like sprung. You know, like allergy season is definitely upon us, but also it's so pretty. And I don't know if I'm angry or happy.
I saw a meme said that, what is it? It was about allergies or something like, you will not defeat me no matter what you say.
Yeah. And you could see it in the air. You could see the thing that's attacking your nostrils. Like it's like aggressive.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Okay.
Before we begin, I want to mention, I don't know if you saw about on YouTube, our YouTube channel, Deborah Battle, commented on our Beyonce episode. We talked about Tamar Davis.
Yes, Deborah Battle. Thank you so much, Deborah. Woo woo. Give her a big shout out.
Thank you so much. So Tamar became a singer and an actress, and she's known for acting in Tyler Perry plays. We know more. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I didn't know that.
I love Deborah because she catches us, and yes, we need catching, you know?
Yeah. And she's always showing us the love. So we appreciate you, Deborah Battle. Thank you so much. I think we should get started.
Okay. Who's first?
I'm first this week. Okay. And we talked about this briefly, but not really. And actually I learned a lot about my notorious woman. So,
okay.
My notorious woman this week is Camille Cosby.
I know the last name.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. So this is going to be interesting. So let's get into it.
Let's go.
So Camille Cosby was born Camille Olivia Hanks on March 20th, 1944 in Washington, D.C. to Guy A. Hanks Sr., a chemist, and Catherine C. Hanks, a childcare worker. Both her parents had her parents had college educations. Obviously, her father had advanced degrees, but that is just unusual for at this time in the 1940s. For two African, not unusual, but not as common as working class African Americans in America in the 1940s. So as the eldest of four children, she grew up in an upper middle class surrounding in Norbeck, Maryland, located just outside of D.C. Her childhood was filled with debutante balls, horseback riding, and all the trappings of the black upper bourgeoisie.
Okay, fancy.
Yeah, so Camille Hanks was very, very fancy growing up.
All right.
So if you've ever seen those vintage photos of like, you know, debutante balls, black, you know, with the black kids all dressed, that was part of Camille Hanks's existence growing up.
Okay.
So because her parents had the means, she attended private Catholic schools growing up, first at St. Cyprian, followed by St. Cecilia's Academy. Growing up, there were reports from her friends that they basically described her as beautiful, smart, and poised.
Okay.
So a poster child for the bougie black set in America. because she comes from this upper class background, she was expected to marry well, as they say.
Okay.
And marry a well-off, well-to-do African-American man of high prestige, basically her counterpart.
Okay.
After graduating high school, she studied psychology at the University of Maryland. So obviously her parents believed in education. And it's so interesting because basically Camille is living the life that most white women lived at this time. Like,
I was going to say, because money can buy you all the things.
It can buy you all the things. We were just saying this offline. Don't believe people who say money can't buy you happiness, because they're lying to you.
You guys, we don't talk about it that much here, but Lavetta and I will go off for hours about that.
Yes.
How money actually will change your life for the better.
Yeah.
We don't know that, like, because we have money.
It won't solve all your problems, but no. It solve a big portion of them.
Like,
sure.
A whole lot of them, though.
Yes.
A whole lot.
Now, while at the University of Maryland, the 18-year-old went on a blind date with a 26-year-old William Cosby, a struggling comedian who had dropped out of college. I did not know this about him, that he had dropped out of college. As you can imagine, Camille's father, in particular, were like, excuse you? Why are you going out with a scrub?
Like, I say no. Like, get out of my house. Yep. I get
which
it.
Which is so, like, okay. But they were in love. She's like, oh, probably. She's probably like, Daddy, I loves him. and her father's like, okay. I'm sure they probably thought, oh, it's her first boyfriend away from school.
Right.
Like, it'd pass over. But apparently, William, aka Bill Cosby, he was not, even though he was basically reaching above him. Because basically Camille's above him socially. And even though he's older than her, apparently she was his first real girlfriend. So he fell
honey,
hard.
What were you doing?
By all accounts. I mean, he was out there on that like stand-up comedy stroll. Like he was trying to make it and like, you know. And so he was very, very serious. They became very, very serious very quickly. And he was obviously trying to kiss up to her parents, particularly her father, who was just probably looking at him like, you're not going to be around much longer. But and so he lived in New York City and would travel up to her home, to her parents' home on weekends to, you know, go to dinner, go to church, really convince them that he was, despite his financial means, he was an upstanding young man and a good match for their daughter. Whatever happened, it must have worked because after a year of dating, Camille married Bill in January of 1964 at 19.
Wow.
So after that,
I have children and I just had to say, hell no. Just like,
no, I can't.
Are you 19? Your frontal cortex is not even close.
Her
to being
parents.
Done.
I mean, 19 is not so young at this age. I feel like if he had been like, from a well-off family.
Like, yeah.
They probably wouldn't have been that upset, but they would have expected her to finish college at least, which she did not. She actually dropped out of college, moved to New York City with him.
Okay.
And she basically, because obviously she's very intelligent and, you know, she basically took over the handling of their finances while he focused on his stand-up and comedy career.
Okay.
Which that worked. They were a great team because a year later in 1965, Bill landed his first permanent TV role in the hit TV show I Spy.
Yes.
Becoming the first African-American man to be a regular on an American TV show.
Yeah.
I did not know that. So he was breaking barriers. So whatever he and Camille were doing in that year, it worked. So the family moved to L.A. where Camille struggled initially socially. According to a Washington Post article, she said that she was, quote, too real for her new city. End quote. Too real,
this
quote,
is the
end
whole
quote. Yes.
New York versus L.A. battle.
And it's that, you know, that who loves you, baby? Call me. Da, da, da. You know, that still goes on today. So
it does. And she's, you know, she was in the thick of that. Right?
Yeah. Because he's
but
he's
if you,
like
if you're poor and you move to the valley, it's less.
Yeah. And also he's a new like again, he's the first black man to be on a hit TV show, like a primetime TV show.
Right.
And I Spy was huge, just for those who don't know. It's like, it was a huge TV show too. So now her husband, on the other hand, was in heaven and loved the perks of being a celebrity in LA.
Yeah.
Now from the beginning, Camille was a big supporter, obviously, of Bill's career aspirations and seemed perfectly fine, to take the traditional stance when it came to their relationship. She basically was the poster child for Stand By Your Man, Be Seen and Not Heard.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So she's a light-skinned black woman. I think that has something to do with it. So she's basically a trophy wife to him in a lot of ways. Yeah. Because remember, she's from an upper-class family.
Yeah.
So he married up. And now they seemingly have the success. And I'm sure, like, she was relieved because finally, I don't know the dynamics of her, of his relationship with her parents, but finally, maybe her parents breathed a sigh of relief, like, oh, she's not going to starve with this idiot.
Right. So, you know, Lovetta, I thought about doing that, about just being like a good, you know, and like getting everything paid for. Mm-hmm. But I just have all these opinions and this mouth keeps moving.
I think, you know? in the 1960s, that was just a lot more like accepted and expected of women.
And,
so
yeah, and women knew how to put themselves in that place.
Yes. And I think
to a large degree, it's a survival skill.
I also think that the fact that he turned over all the finances to her, which means she controlled the purse strings. So
yeah.
Which is also, that's a very common thing with upper class people too. It can be where it's like, oh, you take care of the house, but she took care of the house and the money. So,
right.
I could see that being appealing to her as well. And again, he's marrying up. So there's a part of him that's like putting her up on a pedestal as well. So, okay. Now she basically, even from the beginning, avoided public life and she acted as his manager. For her husband. And she has been depicted throughout his career as, quote, a shrewd businesswoman. During an interview with Ebony magazine, Bill stated, quote, people would rather deal with me than with Camille. She's rough to deal with when it comes to my business, end quote.
Good for her.
So again, I feel like that's the appeal too. So like,
yeah,
versus like a woman of her stature, let's say she married a equally, you know, socially status man, right? It would be right. Like, oh, little woman, just go and sit in the corner. Let the big men handle it. And there might be some of that dynamic going on here. But when it sounds like she, when it came down to business, she's like, we getting this money. Okay.
Yep.
Now, according to one insider, this is where his quote unquote wandering eye became an issue. Because it's always, see, that's why sometimes when you're like, oh, he's marrying up, it doesn't always go in the favor you think it's going to go. Because I feel like there's a bit of them that resents that too, also.
And they want somehow that power dynamic back in their favor.
Yeah. I mean, I also think that men who have wandering eyes, like who just need to find their validation in women, that I feel like it's a deep, deep insecurity. And they always need to constantly be validated. So
I think that it's so rarely actually about sex.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, especially with this guy. But anyway, so this is where it started to become an issue. And reportedly she told him, oh, you can look as long as you don't touch.
You now, can't do shit. I just want to be clear. Sal is listening. You can't do shit. Okay, thank you.
Well, I mean, she's like, look, but don't touch, which that sounds reasonable if she was married to someone reasonable. We now know that he probably was not keeping that promise even then. So
if you have to like say it, like I always joke that like, well, I'm not dead. I can look at anything, you know, but like if you have to say it, something's up, you know.
But I also think, again, remember the time. This is the 1960s. This is before women could open up their own bank accounts, people, which is what they're trying to get us back to. So I can see her being like, oh, boys will be boys, right? So who knows what goes on inside a person's marriage? You think you know on the outside and you never, never know. But whatever was going on in 1971, Camille up and moved their now three children to Massachusetts.
Right.
So he gets this job, 1965, so 6 years later. She reportedly said that she wanted to shield her children from the toxic energy that had contributed to Bill's selfish behavior.
Okay.
So she's categorizing whatever was going on as selfish behavior. Bill stayed behind in L.A. while she and the kids moved to Massachusetts, and he would visit periodically. Now, we now know, according to several sources, with his newfound freedom, Camille's husband became, at best, a womanizer, raging womanizer, or at worst, a rapist. Allegedly. Yeah. Do not sue us, okay? Allegedly.
It is all alleged.
I know he's convicted and then whatever, but we'll get to that. But alleged, okay? Now, during this time, her husband, Bill, met a woman named Sean, who after they dated for they actually dated for a long time. I have a feeling that she was one.
While he's married,
oh, yeah.
He's dating this woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just clarifying. Go on.
After several months, she showed him a picture of a baby that she had named Autumn. And she said that the child was his, even though the child had the last name of Jackson, that of her last boyfriend. So it sounds like this went on for several months, like a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
Like he basically, he had a wife, a girlfriend, and then chicks on the side.
Damn, that's exhausting.
Well, now with the gig being possibly being up in 1974, 10 years into their marriage. So 1974 was their 10-year anniversary. He came to Camille and told her about the affair and the baby.
Oh.
According to some sources, Camille told him to get a paternity test just to make sure.
Yeah.
Arranged it, but later canceled it for fear of the results becoming public. Because remember, this is 1974. Oh, yeah. Like, nowadays, this comes out and it kind of brushes over, but that could have been career ending in 1974.
Yeah.
Now, so again, this was the anniversary, their 10-year anniversary. And in an interview later on, many years later with Oprah, Camille stated that despite having issues around, quote, selfish behavior, she and Bill had recommitted to one another and decided to continue to work on their relationship at this moment. So this is 10 years in.
All right.
Now,
damn.
Now, when it came to his treatment of her, because people wonder, like, why are you staying? Why, you know, again, she's probably living in a big ass house in Massachusetts away from her husband, who she, by all accounts, deeply loves.
Okay.
And then when it came to their relationships, according to Camille, Bill, like, he was very romantic. He showered her with gifts. Oftentimes she would come home or go to a hotel room filled with flowers. He would, like, at the last minute be like, let's go to, like, Paris or something, or, you know, and he would just, like, take her off to, like, a romantic thing. So he was very romantic when he was around, very attentive when he was around.
Well, when your home life is basically a vacation, super doable.
That's
you're
very
not doing
good point.
Laundry. You're not finishing the dishes. You're not reading your kids to bed every night after night.
Well, to be fair, neither was Camille probably. But
that's a good point. You got a staff for that.
I get your point. Okay. I get your meaning. Now, at the same time, according to Sean, who began demanding money from Bill.
Well, yeah.
Bill reportedly gave her about $100,000. That's almost $600,000 in today's money.
Damn.
And as the baby got older, Autumn got older, she would talk with Bill on the phone. And he reportedly would tell her, you know, stay in school, da da da. According to sources, he did tell her, I am not your father, but I can be a father figure to you.
Oh.
So,
there was no test, but who? I mean, honestly, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Because I had a choice of my kid's father being, you know, a guy who works at the grocery store or a guy who makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a minute, that guy's going to help.
Yeah. And I'm sure her mom, Sean, was telling her that, encouraging her. But also, this is why you keep your thing in your pants. Like, he should have listened to Camille. Camille's actually, like, just get a paternity test and let's know for sure, right? Like, get a paternity test. If you're the father, then you set up payments. Easy peasy. But, listen to your wives. Marry well men, marry smart women, and then listen to them. So, now, while Bill was doing whatever he was doing, Camille entered her mid-30s.
Okay.
So she's in her mid-30s, and now she's the mother of five.
Yes.
So after that 10-year anniversary, they basically came back and had two more kids. So again, when they were together, things seemed to be great. It's just, you know, I think in her mind, I think Camille was like, it's the Hollywood. The Hollywood is making him behave
this way.
I think
that gave her the excuse, to tell herself.
But she was smart enough in her mid-30s to be like, I want to focus on me. You know, I got servants now, so let's do this.
Right? Why not?
So she went back to school, finished, and not only got her master's, her bachelor's, her master's, she also got her PhD.
Okay, Camille.
Yep.
Get it.
So in an interview with Oprah in 2014, she said, quote, "I became keenly aware of myself in my mid-30s. I went through a transition. I decided to go back to school because I had dropped out of college to marry Bill when I was 19. I have 5 children and I decided to go back. I didn't feel fulfilled in educationally. I dropped out of school at the end of my sophomore year. So I went back, and when I did, my self-esteem grew. I got my master's and decided to get my doctoral degree. Education helped me to come out of myself," end quote.
Wow. Wait, what did she get her PhD in?
I believe it was education. No, it might be behavior. I looked it up. I don't, you know. Again,
interesting
hashtag
if it
not
would
historians.
Be like psychiatry, right? Hashtag not historians. Because I remember you said she started studying psychiatry.
Yeah.
And ended up married to Bill Cosby.
Yeah, psychology. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, during this time, Bill is, you know, I Spy has ended, but right. I Spy made him a bona fide star. So he's still doing his comedy, acting in movies. He created, so the Fat Albert character was something he had done in his stand-up. It was a character that he had in his stand-up. So they created the Fat Albert cartoon TV show.
I remember Fat Albert.
Yep.
I'm that generation. I grew up with it.
He shot also 3 films, which one of them starred one of our past favorite notorious women, Miss Denise Nicholas.
I love it.
And let's do it again.
So good.
And
I love her.
He signed a deal with Jell-O. So while Camille was busy with the family and school, because they got 5 kids, even with help, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But
it's
also
emotional.
So for the next like 10, 15 years, he was doing this, doing his thing. I'm thinking she's probably thinking, I really think she thought he had women, occasional women here or there. I really don't think she thought really thing of it, anything of it in a sense. But whatever he was doing, and Camille was busy with the kids and her education. But apparently, and I couldn't find a lot of this on documentation, but I do remember, I think it was an NPR interview with a gentleman who had written one of the books about Bill Cosby's life, around 2013, 14, that kind of thing. And they basically found that they had been swindled out of his money. So he was like rich people broke, not real broke.
Okay.
But like
because
the accountant had like done some weird things with financing, they owed taxes, that kind of thing. So, Camille was just like, okay. And then around this time, apparently he came to his wife. Camille's husband came to her and her children and said, and asked them for forgiveness. And they were like, okay, dad, but like for what?
Right.
We don't know. But then they had the financial hit. So after that, Camille was like, well, apparently I dropped the ball on this money thing and I need to get back on these, on the books. So.
Right.
She was always a great career manager for him. And so they basically got together and they were a great team. They still are a great team, I think. And they figured out a way, how can you pivot? What are we going to do? How are we going to go to the next level? And like, really, this is why you got to marry well. And I don't mean like status or money, but like smart people who
smart.
Can help you problem solve.
Yes, exactly.
So she basically took back control of the finances and whipped him into shape. She helped him to refocus on his career aspirations. And they began crafting what many would call one of the greatest comedy concert film ever, Bill Cosby, / himself.
Yeah.
And I was like, Richard Pryor would like to have a word. But basically, it was his whole act had always been clean, observational comedy. Basically, like what you think of with Jerry Seinfeld before Jerry Seinfeld. So very like anecdotal stories, and sometimes they seem meandering, but they're not. They always end. He always brings it back, but it's very clean comedy. It's not Eddie Murphy, who's one of my favorites, who obviously is a child of Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor. Eddie was a lot raunchier, dirtier, you know, but like Richard Pryor, actually, who I love. But Bill was like a lot more like family friendly. And so that was always his kind of thing. Basically what we saw in The Cosby Show later on and all that other stuff, but very clean comedy. And so,
can I tell you that right now in the room that I'm sitting in behind me, I think I have 3 or 4 of Bill Cosby's records mm-hmm. that my father got 100,000 years ago.
He was, and this album, this concert album was massively successful, and it was a film.
Everyone had it.
Yeah, everyone had it. And it, again, it's hard to overstate how popular it was. And so basically all of that clean stuff he had been doing in clubs, because this is before comedians had those big stages.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, the wider public became exposed to this kind of thing, right? So they're like, isn't that the guy from I Spy like 15 mm-hmm. years ago? And like now he's like, he's very clean kind of comedy and very funny. It's very, very funny.
It's very funny. We used to listen to it all the time. It is very funny. What I think is fascinating, it's a lot about like life as a dad mm-hmm. with my kids, mm-hmm. which is not actually his life.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. So, Camille helped him to, they basically decided to lean into that dad persona.
Okay.
And, you know, and so that was the thing they leaned into from then on. Because remember, this is after Let's Do It Again, those movies with Sidney mm-hmm. Poitier, where he's sort of playing like, you know, a more hip kind of guy. Again, lean into that dad persona. Did you know he was one of the original cast members of The Electric Company?
No, I didn't.
I did not know that either. Yep.
I loved The Electric Company.
Yeah. And then again with Fat Albert, the Jell-O commercials.
Right.
So all of this really led to the deal that would like really change both of their lives and even shape America in a lot of ways for, you know, even now, would be the hit TV show, The Cosby Show, which debuted in 1984.
Wow.
So, and I just want to stop here and say, like, now I realize how devious Camille's husband is, because I always thought that he and Camille had the same background.
Yeah.
And basically he used the fact that she is, well, not used, but you know what I mean? Like he wanted to desperately marry into this family and these kinds of people, of kind of black people, mm-hmm. Which would be, because basically The Cosby Show set up with Cliff and Claire was basically a fictionalized version of he and Camille.
Right.
And
which is what we all thought.
Yeah, but she, like, for instance, Camille is the one that suggested that it doesn't be working class, but middle and upper class, because traditionally shows starring black families were working class.
Yes.
You know, other than the Jeffersons, and the whole conceit of the Jeffersons that is also a spinoff of All in the Family. And also it's that they're moving on up. Like, so that's the conceit of the Jeffersons. But with the Cosby Show, which is also the Jeffersons still going on, but it's post the debut of the Jeffersons. But it's this middle upper class black family of two professional parents mm-hmm. with 5 children, 1 son, like he and his wife.
Yeah.
And Claire is directly modeled after Camille.
I mean, if Claire is directly modeled after Camille, I love Camille.
Yep.
Because I just love her as a mother.
Yes. And they can't, you know, and it's the show is full of homages to Camille's family. So Claire's maiden name in the show is Hanks.
Okay.
And again, it's all sort of modeled after Camille's family, this black excellence, this upwardly mobile, which again, the black bougie people have always been here, always mm-hmm. before slavery, during slavery, after slavery, just different parts of the country. They've always been here, but it was just a smaller sect. Now it's larger. It's not as large as it should be, but it is larger. But we hadn't really seen that on television.
Exactly. And I think as
a black person, it was a big show of pride. It was like a source of pride, rather. And again, we love the Jeffersons, but this was just like, and they seemed like a regular family. Like it didn't seem kind of heightened, which I also think that's the brilliance of Camille and Bill. There'd be no Bill Cosby without Camille's influence, right? Mm-hmm. It's brilliant to make it upper class, It's brilliant to sort of, even the tone of the show is very different than the Jeffersons, which I love. I love a broad comedy, but it's a very different feel. And it was huge.
I don't even think shows can be that huge anymore.
I don't think so
either.
Because we
have too much programming.
Yeah. So now The Cosby Show, like I said, was so influential and a mega hit. It's hard to describe today, like how big it was, like to your point, like there's so many different ways we can we take in shows and media and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, according to sources, he was making $10 million a year. That's $30 million in today's money a year.
Damn, that is a lot of money.
With a syndication deal that would give him $250 million, $700 million by today's standards.
Oh my God.
Now that the money was mega big, so apparently was Bill's philandering ways. According to one Cosby Show exec, he was in charge of sending tons of money orders to women. Money orders. Basically, he just had a roster. Like, send this kind of money, this is, send her this, and da-da-da. And stories about these and others began swirling around. I'm sure that Camille heard some of it, but didn't pay any attention. Because really, I really think she feels like, oh, there's a couple women here and there, but they don't really mean anything. I really think she told herself this, right?
Yeah.
And she's removed from it. Obviously, they're going to keep it from the wife. And it was so bad, though, apparently, that in 1989, in an effort to squash a story about him, so the National Enquirer had found out a story about he and Sammy Davis Jr.
What?
In Vegas, swinging at a swinging party with Vegas showgirls.
Ew, yeah.
Gross. So he had been contacted. This is allegedly. He had been contacted by the National Enquirer about this story. So he's like, don't publish a story. I'll give you another story about my daughter, Erin.
Whoa.
Erin was going to rehab. So they published that instead. This is allegedly some of my sources. Again, do not sue us. We do not have any money. But
no, we don't. You'll get nothing.
This is one of the stories that is circulating out there. And apparently Erin found out and became estranged from both her parents because apparently Camille backed her husband. And they basically talked about the you know, they showed a united front and said that they were no longer going to coddle Erin. And I get it. Drug addiction is a very difficult thing. I have a niece that's battling it, and it's really hard. And I can't imagine if your parents have all this money, it's even harder to kind of like maybe hit rock bottom.
It is. It really is. And it's.
But
and at the time, especially, there was zero.
And
there
I don't
was
know
zero,
if
empathy.
Yes, and I wonder if Camille knew about, like, I wonder if she knew about reportedly him allegedly feeding the story to the National Enquirer, and then Erin told her mom, but she didn't believe her. I don't really know. It's really kind of hard to tell. Camille is very like, she's not. She doesn't speak out in public a lot, so it's really kind of hard to tell. But according to sources, they both were like, we're not going to coddle her anymore. So Erin became estranged from her parents. Now,
do you know how she's doing?
No, I don't. Because they have, like, again, they have five children.
Yeah.
And I will get into that in a little bit. Now, The Cosby Show, again, hugely, massively successful show, had eight wonderful years, eight seasons, rather, and it made NBC a powerhouse. Like,
yeah, it
really, really did. It ended in 1992, so it went from 84 to 92. But again, Bill and Camille, you know, they, from the success of this show, again, this is a woman who has a PhD now, right?
Right.
And she also highly values education, but obviously massively successful power couple. They both received several honorary degrees, and they also became huge philanthropists. They donated tons of money, like millions of dollars, many of which were HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, and other artistic endowments. So basically, they were leading a charmed life, like they were well respected. Basically, her destiny was fulfilled as what I mean? Like
her parents were good now.
But I was just so shocked because I thought that both of them came from this kind of path, like, which is
interesting. The Cosby Show definitely sets up the sort of the lore of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're, and what is brilliant about it is that it, again, what you said, the difference between moving on up and we've been here for a while.
Yep.
And America seeing that, it really does, representation does matter. I do believe that show changed a lot of white people's view on Black people. I know, because I was a white child at the time.
And it's sad to say, like, what I always liked about The Cosby Show is that even though they have money, it wasn't about them having money, but, like, it's, like, the silliness that goes on within the family.
Yeah.
The way that Claire would tell her kids off so lovingly. I mean, because Felicia Rashad is
like,
a goddess.
I think I parent like Claire. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it's like, I remember the scene where Vanessa's talking to her dad and she was like, we're rich. She's like, oh, no, you ain't got nothing. Yeah. Me and your mother are rich.
Yeah. I say that we have, I tell you what we can afford because I get to decide what we buy. Because at one point my kid was like, are we poor? And I was like, that depends on what I want to do.
Right. So, I mean, it's a wonderful show and everybody can enjoy it. So now, again, they're living a charmed, charmed life.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, in 1997, so 5 years after the show ended, tragedy struck when their only son, Ennis, was killed during a botched robbery.
Oof.
Now, inconsolable, the couple were in the middle of mourning the loss of, and it was so shocking. Camille was also helping the LAPD to find her son's killer. When Autumn, remember Autumn, the little girl?
Oh, yeah.
Now 22, along with her boyfriend and another man, suddenly demanded $40 million from Bill.
Whoa.
Yeah. And basically it was extortion. She said, if you don't pay up, I'll go to the tabloids and tell them that you're my dad. I'm your secret love child. Da, da, da. So again, all of this is going on. Camille's working with the LAPD. It's just a lot is going on. It's a tragedy of losing your child. And eventually Ennis's killer was found and convicted. After the conviction, Camille turned her focus back to her family, healing. So she basically was like, we're going to start eating better. We're going to do acupuncture, massages. Like, we're really going to focus on, like, healing and coming together as a family.
Okay.
Bill, on the other hand, again, he probably wouldn't tell Camille about this at first. And then he was just like, and I think eventually he comes and tells her, at least what he wants to tell her. At first, he refused a paternity test, but then he was like, you know what? Let's do this. Right. So he submitted blood. But now Autumn and her mother, Sean, and the, you know, they refused. They backed off.
Oh.
So again, listen to your wife. If you had done the paternity test back in 1974, we wouldn't be here now.
That's right. That's right.
So Bill turned around and they actually pressed charges against Autumn and the two men. And Autumn was eventually convicted of extortion and sentenced to 26 months in prison.
Oh, damn, Autumn. Girl, you should not have done that.
I know. I still think it's kind of cruel because I remember when this happened and Autumn seemed kind of off to me. And I really feel like Sean told her whole life that Bill Cosby was her dad.
I really 100% feel like. Agree. I don't think she should have gotten jail time. To be honest, that's a waste of jail time. Like, what are you doing? Just like either like drop the lawsuit or I'll sue you and force you to drop the lawsuit. That's what that should be.
Now, I remember thinking that was just such a, and it was incongruent with the image of the dad from The Cosby Show too. I remember it seemed like really, really mean spirited. And it's like, again, we wouldn't be here if you just kept your thing in your pants. So anyway, now in 2001, Camille became the co-founder of the National Visionary Leadership Project. She's basically always been into she was also credited as one of the producers on The Cosby Show, as she should have been.
Oh yeah.
But she was really big into philanthropy. That's what she totally was, like a society lady. Or is a society lady. Yeah. So she basically put all her her energy into also preserving and sharing the stories of extraordinary African-American elders. Okay. She co-produced a Broadway play, Having Our Say, the Delaney Sisters' first 100 years, based on the book by the same name. And she, following the success of that and The Cosby Show, she started getting into more television producing. Philanthropic efforts has been a source of pride for her. She herself personally donated millions to educational institutions. And remember, I said that they gave a lot of money to colleges. They also gave a $20 million endowment to Spelman College, which is the all-female college within the HBCU circuit. And they really wanted to give their money to causes that were designed to uplift communities and provide opportunities that underscore Camille's own personal belief in the power of education and the arts as vehicles for social change. So
I'm with her, man.
Like, yeah.
That is great.
So again, you know, now we're in the 2000s, 2010s. Again, they are very well respected. Also around this time, especially after his son died, Bill became his sort of like, even his interactions with the Black community became very judgmental, like pull your pants up, that kind of like what we call like respectability politics kind of thing. Yeah. But he just seemed to be very critical of the Black community. And the younger Black kids were like, who the fuck are you? Like,
exactly.
You know, also, apparently it had been an open secret that he was a bit of a creeper. And so, so we're now in 2014. Again, they are well established philanthropy. They're just the bee's knees. Hannibal Buress, I don't know if people know Hannibal Buress, but he is a funny comedian. I like him. I like his style.
I've seen him in things. Yeah.
He had a viral video of him doing a set. I think it was in Philadelphia because Bill Cosby's from Philadelphia. Okay. And it was like an off-the-cuff kind of thing. Like he was trying out new material. And then the fact that he said, like, he made a joke about like Bill raping the women or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And the crowd went, ooh, because it's in Philadelphia's hometown.
Right.
And that went viral. And then now we're in the age of the internet and in the age of like social media. Yep. So shortly after that, somebody put up Bill Cosby account put up a picture, said meme this of him. And it was all about rapist, da-da-da, you gonna give me them panties, that kind of stuff. You know how they are on the internet.
Yes.
So because of that, then all these women started coming out, alleging that he drugged them, he raped them, all this stuff. So the stuff that was more rumored to be thing, all of a sudden the women and people have a voice online because it's all getting momentum. So it got so much momentum in 2014 that these allegations led to him losing endorsement deals. And even reruns.
Jello.
Yeah. And even the reruns of The Cosby Show were pulled.
Yeah.
As the civil and criminal cases piled up, the couple's marriage didn't seem to suffer, though, because Camille's like, they're all lying. They're just money hungry. Like whatever it was she was saying in her head. I'm not saying that's what she was saying, but we can speculate. In fact, she remained quiet like she normally does with most of the initial allegations. She eventually came out swinging, though, in a statement in 2015, so about a year later, regarding the many allegations that had began popping up. She said, quote, none of us will ever want to be in the position of attacking a victim, but the question should be asked, who is the victim? End quote.
Okay, so she does not believe any of the women.
No.
Got it.
And there's more. In a deposition in 2015, Bill admitted to sleeping with several women and obtaining quaaludes intended for these women that he wanted to sleep with. Camille was right there and she listened to him. Now, she was sticking to her man.
Okay, but like he just told you what he did.
Again, in her mind, I feel like she feels like, well, boys would be boys, men would be men. You know, these women know he's married and they're choosing to sleep with a married man. And
I mean, are they choosing or did he drug them, see, allegedly?
That is the question.
Yeah.
So eventually about 60 women came forward, and which led to about 16 different civil cases. which he went to trial for. During the trial, she criticized the judge, writing on Instagram, quote, "Now, after more than 50 years of work that humanized the dehumanized, which also challenged the perpetual architects of racist, exploitative, and greedy maneuvers that have enabled them to divide and conquer, my husband has been severely redefined by Judge O'Neill, despite having zero proof," end quote. Now, basically, I get what she's saying. And let me just explain this for people who are not part of the African-American community here in America. I get it. Oftentimes, it does feel like when we get a hero, the media, non-Black people, can't wait to find a flaw. Yeah. Despite white musicians, superstars having the same flaws or worse flaws.
Yeah, or worse, right?
Or worse. And so we're very, very particular. We're very, very protective of these people. Again, The Cosby Show, what she's referring to is how The Cosby Show really revolutionized how Black people were seen on television.
She's right.
And she's right. However, mm-hmm. two things can be true at the same time. And now, because at this time in 2014, we have many Black superstars. In the 80s, we didn't have as many. Now,
really
2014,
didn't.
We have a lot more. And also, again, social media changes that. That's why people want to ruin social media. People have their say. These women who have been silent, these women who thought, oh, it only happened to me, and not realizing this is a pattern of behavior, feel like that they can say something, right?
Yeah.
But again, this is her husband. Who wants to believe that you're married to a rapist, allegedly?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The mental gymnastics for you to sleep at night must be exhausting.
And it's also, because in your mind, like, and there's a difference between a womanizer and a rapist. Let's be clear.
Like, a womanizer wouldn't bother me so much. I mean, it bothers me, but like...
It would bother me to be married to a womanizer or a rapist, but it would bother me more, obviously, to be married to a rapist.
Like a rapist, personally, if I would sue you, I would go on the stand with those women and then I would suggest that they cut off your penis, no matter how much I loved you once.
Yeah. And again, this is a woman that's shaped by being born in the 1940s. But what she's saying, I understand. And I feel like this is what kept it from coming out, really. All those years before. But again, we are what, 2014. So we are 30 years from the debut of The Cosby Show. So and then also there's a great documentary by, what's his name? It's called We Need to Talk About Cosby. I watched it. It's really, really good. I highly recommend you guys watch it. And he talks about how, like, because again, after post Cosby, her husband had this like very, while she was like this really sweet and warm woman by all accounts, unless you're doing business, he seemed to be very critical and becoming increasingly more and more critical. Like, I think there's like a famous speech he did at like either Morehouse or like one of the HBCUs where he's just or Howard, I think, where he's just going off and they're like,
he basically yelled at everyone. I remember this.
And it's like, motherfucker, you're a rapist. Like, you know, that's what there's. And these are younger people who are not as enamored with him because they're far removed from The Cosby Show. They were not born yet. They were not. They don't know how powerful it was, right? So they don't have as much of a deference to him. So again, over 60 women, they go to jail. I understand what she's saying, and I understand why she's taking this stance. It's all about them trying to tear down a powerful, respected Black man. I get it. I get that's where she's saying. Now, according to some sources, like I said, her attitude basically behind closed doors was men will be men, and my husband's not a rapist. He has a wandering eye. Right. And she also said that there was no jealousy in her relationship. It almost seems like she was like, well, I know he's going to do that. I'm not jealous. I have my things. Maybe she got her man on the side. I would like to think.
I hope so.
That somebody was blowing out Miss Camille Cosby's back while Bill is busy. You know, I'd like to think. I really, really wanted that for her. I want that for her. OK.
Yeah. Same.
Now, they lost their son. 97.
Yeah.
In 2018, they lost their daughter, Ensa, to renal disease.
What is that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kidney. With your kidney. Yeah. Shortly after that, Bill was convicted for the 2004 sexual assault of Temple University executive Andrea Constand and sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison. So it seems like the world is kind of crumbling around them. In 2021, however, his conviction was overturned due to a technicality related to a previous agreement and a previous suit of misconduct with a prior DA who said that I'll grant you immunity if you tell us what we want to know in this case.
Oh, so he was like, what about my immunity? Yep. Not, I wasn't proven.
Yeah. Now, the whole time he was in there in 2021 and 2018, she was like, you know, doing her due diligence as a wife. Obviously, this is her husband. She loves him deeply. She doesn't believe the allegations of rape. I really firmly believe it was all consensual. And then now they're crying rape, as white women have a history in America of doing to black men.
Yeah.
Again, this is a woman who's born in 1944. Two things can be true at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, again, she said it was racism behind this, and she claims that no proof was provided during the trial. Obviously, they found otherwise because he was convicted, but it was overturned in 2021. So he was released. Now, more recently, it has been reported that, but not substantiated, that the couple's 60 plus year of marriage may be at the breaking point. Although some people say it's because of finances. Again, they're rich people poor, not poor people poor.
Right.
You know, all these lawsuits, he's been paying out money. I'm sure lawyers' fees have raked up. Yeah. He's losing endorsement deals. And it may be causing some marital tensions. It's reported that they mainly live apart, he in Philadelphia and she in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. A photo from February of this year show her exiting a chauffeured car in New York City without her wedding ring.
Okay.
But a spokesperson for the family said that it's laughable. It's saying that sometimes she goes out, but the bond is as strong as it ever was before. And again, she's such an enigma. Like, we don't really see her a lot out. You know, obviously we see her like speaking at, charitable events and that kind of thing. But she really does not, like, she hasn't released a book or anything like that. But at the moment, they're both in their 80s. Yeah. And he is pretty much disgraced, you know, but my thing is, she's so fascinating because is she just delusional? Like, but then I ask myself, how can you possibly, how could she even take in that information that she's married to a possible rapist?
I think that there is, I think delusion, I don't want to sit here and call her delusional, but I don't know what the word is, but cognitive dissonance. I think the word is that, because again, I agree with you. Like, she's not wrong. My guess is that they haven't had a sexual relationship. I'm pulling things out of my ass, but like,
maybe
they're a team more than they're a marriage,
which I think probably happens when you get older. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
But maybe not. But like, but maybe for them, especially because they set up very early on in their marriage, very early on, that they're going to live separate lives together.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And so she's just, and then she is as much to thank for the Cosby Show as he is. And she is right that the Cosby Show was so important to our country and to negate it somehow maybe takes black people back in a place we don't want them to go.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting. You just said that about the marriage. I hadn't thought, as a married woman, you definitely have more insight than I have. Like, she set up this as, and also if he was not accused of all this, this would be a charm. This would be an amazing life. If he could keep his thing in his pants.
Yep.
This would actually be an amazing life. And maybe that's the world she's living in. Like, I have an amazing life and people are trying to take it away from me.
And she is compartmentalizing, and she grew up at a time where men were going to be men and women are just crazy. And she was able to lead, it sounds to me, somewhat of a solitary life, meaning that she was never at risk of anything bad happening to her, really. She was home. Yeah. She had staff. She had children.
She had children
that she was protected. And I think she couldn't maybe see that they weren't asking for it.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know. But definitely some cognitive dissonance.
Well, that is Camille Cosby. I know it's a little long, but I thought she was just fascinating because, and big up to our producer, Teresa, who suggested this because I hadn't even thought of it. And I was like, oh my God, that's such a great idea.
Teresa throws us stuff every so often.
Yeah. So,
she didn't throw it to me though. That's fine.
But that is Camille Cosby. Tell us what you guys think. Cause she is endlessly fascinating. Now I know all this about her. Because I think before I did my research, I thought she was just like, cuckold? Like, I usually cuckold is like
a victim.
Like, she's Jackie O or something, right? Or Jackie Kennedy. Right. Like, I think cuckold is usually towards men, but I thought she was just like, oh, she's like a victim and, you know, and no. By all accounts, she is not a wallflower at all. Yeah. So, but like you said, like, you never know what goes on. I know you don't know what goes on in people's relationships and certainly not marriage, but I just know from my own personal experience with my own past, like what people thought was going on in our relationship was completely not going on in our relationship. Right. So,
and I have this feeling that she is protecting the honor, integrity and integrity of the upstanding Black citizen.
Yes.
That
yes.
changed people's perspective on Black people in general in this country.
Yeah, because she definitely loves Black people, and she's very aware of like the images of Black people. And, you know, again, sometimes I feel like the younger people say respectability politics, but it's like, no, they live in a time where, like you didn't see that many Black people on TV.
You didn't.
Like, I think just people just don't really realize like how. So she, I feel like she feels like an attack on him is an attack on that legacy, which she is a part of, but also is important overall. So I empathize with her in a lot of ways. I also empathize with her just as a woman who's loved men who are fucking problematic. You know, I'm the type of woman, Bill would have been stabbed a long time ago. He would have been like, oops, ladies and gentlemen, breaking news. Bill Cosby has died. He is falling down the stairs. Yes. He fell down the stairs. He fell from a fall, even though there's 10 stab wounds in his neck.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but anyway,
it is fascinating because in a lot of ways she's not wrong. Like,
Yeah, she's not wrong about that. She's not. And I you know, and the people who are at, but these women also, the victims, like, again, watch that documentary. It is so fascinating. We need to talk about Cosby. It's like in three, because they also talk about this, like the racial dynamics, because that's another thing. Yeah. Overwhelmingly, most of the women were white. Not all, but overwhelmingly, they were white. So there's that's playing into it. And actually the guy who played one of his son-in-laws in the show said that he never believed anything, you know. But then when Beverly Johnson came out and said that he tried to drug her, that's when this guy was like, I mean, it's Beverly Johnson, like the first Black woman to be on the cover of American Vogue. Like, it's not.
Yeah, she's not like out to get, there's no reason. I mean, I err on the side of believing women.
Yes, we do.
It's really, really hard to sue famous people and be the face of a victim.
Yes.
So when people choose to do that, I don't think they're, I think they're trying to make the world a little bit better, and that's really hard to do.
Yeah, and victims need to be heard. So
yes,
but a lot of the Black women who were assaulted, you know, accused him, also said, I was very conflicted. Because it's like, come forward and tear down someone, that same thing that Camille is talking about and that she's concerned with. And, you know, thank God, again, I think that people have nuance, people who are not online, but people have nuance.
No, they're
and
not
they can,
online.
They can struggle with that and be like, I still love The Cosby Show. I still love what it did for me. And Bill Cosby is a piece of shit. So, both. So
All the things.
Yeah. All right, darling. I know that was so long, but who is your notorious woman this week?
Mine is not very long, but she is amazing. Little less complicated.
Okay.
We're going to go back. We're going to go back in time. All right. There was no notes. She was born in the 13th century Okay.
Oh.
Her name is, and I'm going to say it wrong, Kutulun. I'm going to call her Kutulun.
Kutulun.
And y'all are going to listen to this episode and tell me how to actually pronounce it. Thank you. We're on Instagram, Notorious Women Podcast. Tell me there. DM me. She was a great-great-granddaughter of Genghis Khan.
Oh.
Yeah. So he was a very, very powerful Mongol leader in Mongolia. So she
Genghis
was
Khan,
born.
Yes.
Yes.
You're going way back, way
I'm
back.
I'm taking us back in time. Listen, I haven't seen Back to the Future in a long time. And that's why I can't hit any of the notes in that song. So there was a region in Mongolia called the Steppe region. And it's spelled S-T-E-P-P-E. So maybe steppy. I don't know. So in that area, that terrain was very rough. So it was kind of hard to live. And so children of this area were taught to ride horses, basically like before they could walk. They were also taught to use a bow and arrow, basically before they could walk. And these were boys and girls out of necessity. So out of necessity, we did not genderize things because we couldn't, right?
Because it's dumb.
Now, they did like have systems where like war happened, the boys would go to war, but the girls had to stay home and like fight the big animals nearby and like battle the terrain. So they just, everyone needed to be prepared for all the things. Now, speaking of being prepared for things, one of their favorite things to do in order to prepare for the next war, because that was like life was like eat, sleep, war. Okay.
Yeah, that's why Genghis Khan conquered everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's kind of how he did it. Yep. So one of their favorite pastimes like in society was wrestling.
Oh.
It was a social event. You know, everyone could watch. So it was entertaining. And then you could work on it and practice. It was something to do. And so it was done. Now, girls didn't necessarily wrestle, but I'll get to that. So she was born like 1260. By 1280, her father's name was Kayudu.
I mean, you know, I mean, better than me.
Listen, I'm sure she had a mother, but they did not care. But she had a father, Kayudu, and he became the most powerful ruler of Central Asia. So she's 20. Now, she also had what they think somewhere between 14 and 40 brothers. I'm sure she had sisters.
Come again? What? What now?
Mm-hmm. I, too, just got a yeast infection after I saying that last sentence. But
I think
he had many wives. I'm hoping, honestly. So, point is, she was her father's favorite. So he had all these brothers to choose from, and Kutulun was the number one child.
I love girl dad.
I do too.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. So here's what it was. Mongolia in 1280. So Genghis Khan's empire was huge, right?
Yes.
Totally huge. And one of the reasons they think was because he promoted military leaders based on skill and not based on what family you came from.
Go figure.
Right? So like no Nepo babies, right?
Yep.
Some of those skilled people were actually women.
Oh. So uh-huh. Genghis Khan is like, listen, as long as you can do the job, I don't give you boobies.
I'm not like going to say that he's like our new hero or anything,
no.
But like, way to go.
Because he's probably like, and also give me those boobies. But I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I'm just,
you know, also that.
But this is revolutionary, like, we know. Because
it is. And what he would do in order to cement those like outlying areas that he still wanted to control, he would marry off his daughters to like, you know, the guy who was in charge of that area. And then he would put her as queen and draft the husband into his wars.
Oh, so he's doing basically what, Queen Victoria basically got this from Genghis Khan, like, because the British royal family just married everybody off and all the kingdoms. And that's very smart.
It's very effective.
Yeah. Everybody becomes family, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my cousin.
Yeah. Now, I hope the women, but I hope the women as queen was just like, you also have to treat her with respect. And it's not just
I hope so too. Yeah, I like to think that that's what happened. That she's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm in charge now.
Yeah.
So Kutulun was from one of the outlying areas where that happened. Okay.
Okay.
So a couple generations later. Now, as her daddy's favorite, she helped him make decisions about this, their kingdom. She actually rode at his side in battle. She helped head up his army of thousands of warriors. So here's what happened. Okay. So another one of his descendants was Kublai Khan.
Okay. I've heard of Kublai Khan. Yeah.
Right. They've made movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, unsurprising, he wants to rule everything. So Kublai Khan is like, mine. But some of the other Mongol states were like, no, stop it. Okay. One of those states was her father. Her father was like, bitch, get out of my house, right? So they essentially fought them and they won. Now, that meant, so Kublai Khan had a lavish court. They were very sedentary in their lifestyle. They didn't, it was a very different, women did not have as much control and power over their lives as they did where she lived. So let's get back to wrestling.
Okay.
Now, who was the greatest wrestling champion of that time in that era? It was her.
No.
She was famous for her wrestling skills.
I did not see that coming.
Uh-huh. So she's a horseback rider. She can like do archery. She can like kick some ass in war. And she was a really good wrestler.
Man, what was her workout routine? I like to.
I know, right? I don't think my workout routine is as effective.
It's flexibility, strength, stamina.
Right?
Wow.
You know she did Pilates. Okay.
Yes, she did.
And part of it was in that area, like foot binding was a thing, was happening. But in those where they were fighting Kublai Khan, from what I read, they did not foot bind. They didn't have veils. They were not hidden from men. They were able to be their own person.
Huh. Go figure. If you just leave women alone, they can prosper. Go figure.
I know. Weird, right?
So weird.
Who'd have thought? Certainly not you and I. So she's getting older and her parents are like, oh my God, you're ancient. I mean, what is she, 15? I don't know. But they were like, girl, you do have to get married at some point. And she was like, I don't want to. And they were like, girl, you have to. So she said this. She said, whoever could beat her in a wrestling match, she would marry him.
See, now, I love this woman. That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
Can we bring that back? That's how you find a husband.
Uh-huh. That's how you find a husband. Exactly.
They always want you to, quote unquote, submit to them. Be like, well, can you pin me down, daddy?
Oh, but you can't. Never mind. Okay. So they also, if they wanted to try for her hand in marriage, they had to present her with horses.
Yeah,
now,
damn
she
right.
Gonna keep those horses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, either you keep it together or she just keeps them. Okay. So I want to talk about how they wrestled because there's a book that I read. I got a lot of my information from a book called Troublemakers in Trousers, which I highly recommend. It's kind of a kid's book.
Troublemakers in Trousers.
And it's
that?
So
I love
good.
That
I have
title.
It's so good.
Love it.
And okay. So this is what, from the book, said they. This is how they wrestled. Quote, stand and face your opponent. At the signal, lunge at him, grab him by the shoulders or the waist, and try to throw him to the ground. Meanwhile, your opponent pushes you in the other direction, trying to do the same thing. So it's a battle of strength to see who can throw the other person or at least make them touch the ground with something other than their feet. Also, so that end quote. Also, there were no separate weight categories, which means she's like, it's not like, don't listen to this and be like, well, she's 100 pounds. She's wrestling another 100 pound person. No, she's not.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really is a meritocracy. Like, if you can figure it out.
She's like a princess. So all these boys are like, yes, I want her as my queen. And they failed. So many men tried. She got so many horses.
Yeah. And also the idea, there's no going back from coming back from like, I threw this woman threw me down. My wife beat me at wrestling. Yeah. There's no coming back for that.
There's no. Yeah.
Unless it's your kink. Like if you're like, yeah, right, I want her to wrestle me.
Super into that.
Yeah.
Which is not impossible.
It might have been apparently. That was not her kink, apparently.
No. So apparently this was going on for a while. And then suddenly a hot guy showed up. And she was like, who?
And then she's like, I'll let you win if you pin me down.
But apparently she wouldn't because she was too competitive. But she told her parents that if he does win, she will submit without argument to the marriage. But then they battle. And at the last minute, she pinned him. And then he was humiliated and she got, wait for it, 1,000 horses from him.
1,000 yeah. horses?
1,000 horses.
Okay, I just got turned on a little bit.
Yeah, it's hot, right? Absolutely.
He gave you 1,000 horses? Wow. Yeah.
And this is, I love this. So then, according to the chroniclers of this time, and the chroniclers are, did I say this already? Is Marco Polo actually wrote down a lot of her history because he traveled in that area. But there are other chroniclers of the time that also kind of overlap information about her. So they're pretty sure that this really all happened.
Okay.
That she did eventually marry. And the guy was, quote, tall, lively, and good looking.
Mm.
End quote. I love that for her.
I do too.
And they don't have evidence that he had to wrestle for her.
Yeah. I mean, good for her.
And then she gets married and she still serves in her father's army because she's like, I'm married, but I'm still here. And her father actually gave her a valuable medallion to wear around her neck called a gurgi that was traditionally only worn by men.
Hmm.
Now, around 1301, her father was wounded in battle. And he was basically dying and it took about a month for him to finally pass. Now, aww. While that was happening, he was trying to name her to be the next leader of the military. But according to chroniclers, she actually wanted one of her brothers to take over so that she could help run the affairs of the state. I think she was less inspired about running the military than finding out how to run, the country.
Yeah. And also it's something that maybe she did with her dad, and then now if he's leaving, if he's gone,
yeah,
the thrill is gone.
The battle
of that.
Part was
yeah.
more like yeah. hanging with dad.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe she was like, women need to keep their rights,
yes.
and I need to make sure that they do.
Also, you run the government, you tell people what to do,
right? I would much prefer
including
to
the
do
military.
That. That's right. You run the military.
Yeah.
And then according to Wikipedia. Quote, according to some accounts, he tried to name her as his successor to the Khanate before he died in 1301, which would be that. However, his choice was declined due to her male relatives. Mm. Once he was dead, she guarded his tomb with the assistance of her brother, Oris, one of her many thousands of brothers. But then she was challenged by her other brothers and a relative because she resisted their succession.
Yeah.
And after this, we don't really know. After that is lost to history. We don't know. They think she died something like 5 to 15 years later. Wikipedia says it's 1306, but we don't really know. So there is an opera called Turandot.
Okay.
Which if you see it written down, it looks familiar.
Okay.
But I don't know much about opera.
Me either.
The point is, it's about her. It's about her story. So the problem, a lot of Western culture has taken her story and made it some into the books and into opera. But a lot of times she's depicted as a proud woman who succumbs to love, not like a badass athlete and warrior and someone who could destroy anyone she feels like destroying,
And that's the thing. Why is it that a woman has to... a powerful, strong woman has to be taken down by love. Why can't right? love, why can't she have, why can't she, that was my annoyance with Wonder Woman. I know this is off topic. That movie, I'm like, it's fucking Wonder Woman. Yeah. She's like an Amazon. And like, she decides to do something because she, for a dude she just met like a week ago? Like, what?
Hell no.
Like, why
is Captain America changing his mind?
Yeah.
Because like, he wants to settle down and
why does it
be
have to be
every,
when
you know,
she, when a woman
children?
Falls in love, it's like, oh, it's like, it's also the equivalent of like clipping her wings, right? Like,
yeah.
Why
yeah,
can't
absolutely.
She keep her wings and be in love? I don't understand why she has to choose.
Right. And it's interesting because in what I read that in Mongol culture, she is remembered as like an athlete and a warrior.
Yeah.
In Western culture, we had to take it and we had to fuck it up.
Oh, gotcha.
That feels
gotcha.
Like us.
Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing it back.
Yes.
Now, here's what I will say. In Mongolia, now, to this day, wrestling is still a very popular sport. But guess who's not allowed to wrestle?
Women.
Mm-hmm. It's women. And it is so barred from women that they designed the uniform to be a like an open-chested vest so that women couldn't sneak in. Yeah.
Earth is the ghetto. Okay, like,
seriously.
Why are we going backwards?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why are we
it's
going
trash.
Backwards? Like,
our planet is trash.
Yeah, this is why aliens aren't really visiting. They don't want it. They were like, no. They were like, have you been to Earth? It is
they
the ghetto.
Up.
Okay. No. Let me take my squid face and live my like advanced life.
Protect my squid faced babies.
Yes.
From the ghetto.
From the
of
ghetto.
Earth.
Yes. My Lord, it's like they are not very bright. The earthlings are not very bright.
You know, and they're right.
Because they keep finding knowledge and then being like, no, we don't want that. No.
Psych.
Yep.
Bullshit. But, well, we're bringing it back today. That's Kuta Loon. I love her.
Kuta Loon. Oh my God. That's amazing. I've never heard of her. Like, and it also reminds me of the story of Muhammad's wife.
Yes.
The Prophet Muhammad. Like,
totally.
And then later on, how Muhammad was like, my daughter is smart. Yeah. My daughter Khadijah is very, very smart. Like, it's like, why are we going backwards? Like, imagine where we could be as a society if we were not going forward and then going back five steps.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they figured this out during Genghis Khan time. Come on.
I know.
Anyway, thank you so much for sharing that.
That's welcome.
Amazing.
What a fascinating day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I love it because even though I feel like I admire Camille Cosby in a lot of ways, obviously, because of, especially for her philanthropy, but also like she used the institution of marriage to get the things that she wanted to get done. The fact that she went back to school and concentrated on herself says a lot about her character.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. Marriage is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the whole Bill Cosby stuff is not complicated. Even as a black person who loves the Cosby Show and is a proud black person, like that motherfucker did that shit. Allegedly. Don't sue us.
But
people are also, I'm older and people are complicated. And so even though I feel like I understand Camille's actions, I don't agree with them. But to me, she's a strong woman. And Kuta Loon, like the fact that she, you know, was a badass, but she also had the protection of her father. Because I bet you what happened.
Yeah.
After he died, her dipshit brothers, because she got
put
so many
her,
of them, put her in her place. Clipped
listen,
her wings.
Kuchulun reminds me a lot of me.
Does she?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why are you questioning me?
No.
I'm just kidding.
I think she sounds more like me also. Like,
yeah, actually, yeah, because you're more of a wrestler than I am.
Like, no. I mean, like you and me both of her and Camille is what I mean, not you and me. But like, I think we both like we can relate to her because we're like, yeah, she's like getting physical and like, of course she can be a warrior and run the government. Of course she could. Like what?
Yeah, because no one told her she couldn't.
Right.
No one hinted that she couldn't. And if you just kind of go, yeah, of course, duh.
Yeah. And to the idiot brothers who are like,
Yeah.
What do you think? And it could have been like, you know how brothers are. Like, yeah. It's like, it could have been something she said. Like, maybe she made fun of one of them when they were little, and then he never forgot it.
Uh-huh.
And then when their dad dies, he's like, remember you said that thing to me? Yeah. Who's in charge now? Because brothers are always the same throughout history.
Because brothers are always snowflakes, and that is a fact.
Especially to their younger sister. I mean, we're making up stuff, but it happened.
Yeah. I definitely do love my brother if ever he listens to this podcast, but I'm going to I'll say it again. Mm-hmm.
I love my brothers too, but I could totally see one of them. Like,
oh, yeah.
If our dad died, I was dad's favorite, and then I could totally see one of them being like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care. I didn't care if you're dad's favorite. But on that note, we love brothers. The good,
yes.
And there's good brothers out there too.
Only the good ones, though.
Only
bad
the
ones
good
can
ones.
Suck it. Okay.
They can suck it. Thank you so much for sharing that. And guys, that wraps it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Again, remember to follow us on all the things. Please also, again, I always say this every week. We say this every week to copy the link for the podcast and send it to your friend or your family or a loved one. Just copy the link and send it to them. Also, if you want to help us out financially, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And give us some money, some moolah, some
cashola,
dinero, you know? And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
They can come to Instagram, my friends, Notorious Women Podcast. We're also on TikTok for however long TikTok exists. We are also, you can email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. You can DM us on our Instagram. That works too. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from you.
Like Deborah Battle. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, guys. We will see you guys next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.